Back with you once again. Great show. A lot of great calls. Midweek Wednesday, April 28th, 2021 on Connecticut Today. Noted presidential author and historian Amity Schles joined us to talk about modern lessons that the Republican Party can take if they look back at past years. And she connected all those with the president a lot of people don't talk about. And she says that's wrong when it comes to Calvin Coolidge. And state rep from Shelton, Jason Perillo, joined us in the back half of the 4 o'clock hour. Jason, one of just 8 members of the legislature and 4 Republicans teaming with 4 Democrats to redraw Connecticut's State House and Senate lines after the most recent 2020 census. Let's get step away from the phones, back off. Delving into one of my favorite subjects that I love to get into here, a little presidential history, because frankly, a lot of society, and I'm saying this with all the love in my heart, once they get out of school, there's no more reading about the presidents. They're not geeks like me who absorb everything they can about former presidents. New book out now. There's a new edition of the autobiography of, come on, who am I talking about? I started teasing this on the morning show. Yes, Calvin Coolidge, the guy that was in office before the Depression. Now, you may say to yourself, well, what can we learn from Calvin Coolidge? Well, our next guest has written about Mr. Coolidge. He was the 13th president of the U.S., serving 1923 to 1929. He oversaw one of the greatest periods of prosperity in American history. Are we in danger of making the same kind of mistakes back then, now, that shouldn't have been done back then? Author and columnist Amity Schles is the guest. She's written many a great book, numerous New York Times bestsellers, and she chairs the board of the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation. Amity, hi, it's Paul at WICC here in Bridgeport. How are you?
Glad to be with you. I've been in Bridgeport often, and glad to be with your audience. Coolidge is an awesome president. If he were a stock, he'd be a buy.
Now, see, this is interesting.
He be GameStop on a good day.
This is interesting.
Because he's the most mispriced, right?
Okay, yeah. Go on. This is the interesting thing, Amity, is presidential scholars like you do look into people like that, but I would hazard to guess that if you were here again in Bridgeport or just walking around anywhere, you say George Washington, oh yeah, JFK, oh yeah, Ronald Reagan, oh yeah, even Donald Trump, oh yeah. You probably, am I wrong, Amity, or do a lot of people at the mention of Calvin Coolidge go, okay, but what's about Coolidge?
Right, and it's a double pity because he's a New Englander. He's a real New Englander.
Yeah.
He was governor of Massachusetts, very successful. He went all the way up in Massachusetts from, you know, clerking around the town of Northampton, where Smith is, in Hampshire County, to president of the Senate, in Massachusetts, leader in the general court, and then governor of Massachusetts. His career was made in New England. Family's from New England, Boston, Vermont, and so on. And he had a lot to offer that will be familiar to New Englanders. Maybe, for example, the idea of saving money, the idea of promising less and delivering more, under promise, over deliver. That was Coolidge. The idea of not over your life is not just about marketing, right? Life is about delivering. He said, less time in the limelight, more time burning the midnight oil. Now, we don't have the oil anymore, but we know what he means. That is, he worked very hard and he achieved a lot. I think you alluded to something. Did Coolidge cause the Great Depression? Is that what you were alluding to?
No. I was saying that he was in office pre-Depression, and a lot of people, I think, that contributes, I think, Amity, to a mischaracterization of him sometime, or kind of being a footnote in history, because you think Depression, FDR, that's all you
FDR,
ever hear.
Yeah.
But the economy was doing pretty well under Coolidge.
Right. So think about what your kids get in school at those excellent nationally ranked high schools you just mentioned. I know Darien is better than this, since you mentioned Darien. But anyway, the thing to note is in high school, they kind of learn, what do they learn about U.S. history? What do they learn about the 20s? Well, the most widely read book about the 20s is The Great Gatsby, right? And you think, Great Gatsby, it was all false, like a bubble in Jay Gatsby's champagne glass. Plus, he was a rat most of the time.
Yeah.
And then the bubble broke and the Depression came. That's what kids take away from The Great Gatsby, right? It was all false and kind of beautiful, but an illusion full of fake people who weren't nice to working class people, right? The car crash. But even that is false history, because if you look back at Gatsby, you will see that book, which every child reads in high school, all romantic, was published in 1925. It was not referring to the great crash of 29 that preceded the Depression. It was referring to a crash in the early 20s, which was followed by solid growth and everyone getting a Model A plus a radio.
Yeah.
So, the way we remember the period of Coolidge doesn't go along with the record. Let's just say that. And the record of Coolidge's economy, we also say the Roaring Twenties. Well, the 20s really did roar. That was the decade when we got Saturdays off. I don't think many people know, but Americans used to work 5.5-6 days. Then we saw productivity gains where you could do the same, earn the same money for 5 days. That's a very important part
it's
of
not,
our life.
Not
Saturday.
Too shabby. Amity, hang on. I want to be right back with you because you also co-authored an op-ed recently, and you're kind of warning Republicans about doing something and tying it back to the Coolidge years. Amity Schles is the guest. Amity, hang on. Once again, co-editor of the new edition of the autobiography of Calvin Coolidge. A guy that a lot of people just, once you get out of school, even if you learn a little bit about him in school, you never think about the guy again. Traffic and weather together on WICC. Author, lecturer, historian Amity Schles is the guest. She's co-editor of a new edition of the autobiography of Calvin Coolidge, a little known but pretty successful president. And then, of course, he became a footnote after FDR stepped in and, did what he did to try and get the country out of a depression. In fact, one of the subjects of Amity's previous books is to whether or not, you know, FDR, did he exacerbate it? Did it go on longer than it should have because of his policies? That is for another day. Amity, you talk about what the Republicans are facing now in the wake of the Trump years and a win in November, this past November, by Democrats. And you kind of put out a warning for them. What is that?
Well, the warning is, and this goes for Democrats too, that greatness is not always a great ambition for presidents. You heard President Biden, you drop the word great a number of times in his inaugural, for example, and now he's emulating the great society, which was Lyndon Johnson's program. Johnson didn't say we want a good society in the 1960s. He said we wanted a great one. And he said we're going to cure poverty, C-U-R-E, cure poverty. We're going to get reading and math scores higher for all Americans. And what else? We're going to end racial divisions and tension. And Johnson failed in part because these goals were too grandiose. It was too much. The great society wasn't great, the result of it, unfortunately. And Coolidge is the opposite, right?
Yeah.
Coolidge never said, we're going to be great, 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 great. He said, I'll do the best I can by following the party platform.
Yeah.
I'll bend my energies. And you know what? He did get a great result economically, but he understood also that when you talk a lot about great, then suddenly it has to be you that's great. Make America great. I'm not. This is a disease that all presidents have, by the way. So it's not particularly just critical of President Trump. As I say, President Biden seems to have it, too. I'm going to go for greatness, ergo I am great. Ergo, I belong on Mount Rushmore. And often it turns into vanity. Coolidge actually said it's a safety for the country, for the president to know he is not a great man, just a servant. You know, very New England, very old-fashioned, and it actually worked for him. The people really liked Coolidge because he didn't make it about him. He made it about policy to which the party had committed.
So Amity, though, are we in a time then where people just, I mean, is Is policy too complicated for the average Joe or Mary on either side of the aisle? Do they just want this great superstar, this superhero with a cape? Is that the problem we're having?
Right, but we want a celebrity president. Okay, we've often wanted a celebrity president. Warren Harding was elected because people thought he was really good looking, and women were voting for the first time in 1920. That didn't work out. I don't get either part. And Warren Harding got us into a scandal that was Teapot Dome.
Oh yeah,
sort of like there are choices for the party. You know, always they can. They can go to the center, which is what the Republican Party usually does after a scandal. Think of Gerald Ford. That's not great because then they're indistinguishable from Democrats, Democrat light, Republicans as Democrat light. Mm-hmm. So what Coolidge did was he said, I'm going to stick to our platform, which happens to be a free market platform. And yes, you bet, even in this era, free markets are pretty defensible. And I think that gets to your point of the average Joe says this is too complicated. It's not that complicated. Markets serve the United States very well. It's not fashionable to say that, but the evidence suggests it's true. And the current GOP is kind of mushy because they're embarrassed because they might sound, cruel, right? Oh, no. But the truth is that markets are not always cruel, and sometimes they make life better, like as in that 20 story we just discussed. So you certainly can't understand the distinction between, say, Mitt Romney's child credit or child allowance and the Democratic Party member's child allowance. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a child credit allowance. And that's because they're not that different, actually.
Yeah, you know, Hamidi, I can't
the voter.
I can't tell you the amount of calls I get here on a weekly basis where people say, you know what, Paul, they're all the same. They're all the same. And, you know, on some things, Amity, you're right. They are.
So what Coolidge did was he said, I don't care if the progressive movement is going and capitalism has a bad name right now. Our platform said we're going to cut taxes, though we are. Because people move away. He didn't say that, but I'm thinking of that. When your taxes are too high in a place. And business is stronger when taxes are lower. And the data are right there to look at. There may be some contest about that now. But if you really look at the data, and even someone without a PhD can look at tax data, you will see that lower rates tend to cheer people up so they start more business.
Yeah, yeah.
particularly when they can own the business and not be regulated too much. What is what business wants? It doesn't want a perfect environment. It just wants it to be not too bad out there, you know, and that's what Coolidge provided after a very rocky period. I sound crazy talking so much about Coolidge, but the reason I do is he is the forgotten president, the one other people put down for various reasons,
yeah,
who warrants so much interest. And his autobiography, we Matt Denhart and I wrote the intro for this edition. Please buy it. It's the one with the baseball on the cover.
Yes, it looks like it's from an opening day he was probably at. That's what I'm getting.
He was doing his best to throw the ball out
okay.
in manly fashion. You know how that goes.
Well, yes. If you're going to throw it, it's got to be manly. We're out of time. It's the new edition. It's the autobiography of Calvin Coolidge. Authorized, expanded, and an annotated edition. It came out this past January 11th. Amity Schles has been the guest. Other great books, the first edition of Coolidge, The Great Society, The Forgotten Man. These books get high praise. Folks, if you're a presidential historian like I am, if you'd love to learn more about these people, it is great stuff. Amity Schles, thank you. You've been through Bridgeport numerous times. I hope you'll come here again, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Connecticut. Okay.
Thanks, Amity. Appreciate it. Amity Schles is her name, folks. Schales. The completion of any census not only alters the 435 people in the House, as we saw a little movement with that earlier this week, none of our five members of Congress, five congressional seats, are going anywhere. But every 10 years, states have to take a look at who's living where in their state, and sometimes adjustments are due as to what the state assembly districts, state house districts, state senate districts look like. One of the eight legislators who will be tasked with that to come up with a plan for some redistricting is Shelton GOP State Rep. Jason Perillo, who joins us again. Hey, Jason, Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Good talking to you.
So talk about your involvement here, Jason. Four Democrats, four Republicans, I believe. You're one of the Republicans. And the process here that I think has got a couple of deadlines. One is September, one is November. What are you folks tasked to do right now?
So what we do as a bipartisan committee, you know, like you said, four from each party, four from the House, four from the Senate, is get together once we have all of the data in place, which actually, quite frankly, is not in place at this point in time. It's greatly delayed because of COVID. But once we have that data in place, we work within some very important parameters to identify what the new map is going to look like. 151 districts in the State House, 36 in the Senate, all have to be approximately the same size. And we work on a bipartisan basis, trying to come up with districts that are drawn fairly, trying to do it in a way that is open and transparent. And that begins, ideally, it would have begun already, but again, we don't have the data. So, you know, we're looking at getting the first round of data in August, the second round of sort of cleaned up data in September. And to your point, Paul, our first deadline is right around that time.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very, very it's going to be a sprint to try and get this thing done. I mean, it will be done, but it'll be in short order.
So again, Jason, as you say, the numbers for the districts, I mean, you're never going to get them perfectly equal, but to a best effort, what? Each Senate district has to be about 90, 95, 100,000 people, and each House district has to be, you know, whatever the state's population is divided by 151, as best you can do it, right?
Yeah, so Senate districts are just slightly over 100,000. House districts are, you know, say 23,600 or so, and we try to keep those districts plus or minus 5%. So we try to keep them approximately the same size, and we try to honor existing political boundaries. We don't like to divide towns if we don't have to. You know, you don't want to cross over a river when there's no way to get from one part of the district to the other, you know, things of that sort. So those are the types of things we try to honor in the process. And, you know, it, like I said, it is a bipartisan process. It has worked, you know, decade after decade. But yeah, those we try to live within those bounds, so to speak, in order to come up with fair districts.
All right, Jason, hang on. Great stuff. I want to get a little deeper into this with you. Shelton, GOP State Rep. Jason Perillo is the guest. He is one of just eight members of the General Assembly, four Republicans, four Democrats, two each from each party from the House and Senate, who might, although it might not be too bad, might change the district you're in a bit or friends of yours are in. We'll talk about that straight ahead. First, traffic and weather together, 436 on WICC. That is us, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Republican State Rep. Jason Perillo of Shelton joining us for a few more minutes to talk about the redistricting that happens here in Connecticut. We're not talking about the federal congressional districts. We're talking about the State House and State Senate districts that happens once every 10 years in the years immediately after or in the year immediately after the taking of the U.S. Census. You know, Jason, I know you're stressing it's a bipartisan commission, and that's great. And I guess you have to fend off a natural cynicism some people are going to have. And I think you did, saying there's not a whole lot of wiggle room here. But people are going to say, oh, here it is. They're going to gerrymander this, and they're going to, my district's a Democratic district, and now they're going to make it Republican or vice versa. What would be your answer to all that?
Well, the biggest thing, to your point, it really truly is bipartisan. So you've got that push from both sides of the aisle to make sure that things like that don't happen. I mean, and secondly, there are key principles that we really not only try to, but we must keep in place to avoid that those ugly, gerrymandered, ridiculous looking districts. Like I said, trying to respect municipal boundaries, you know, where, you know, you don't have one legislative district that covers, you know, that slithers its way through three or four or five different towns. We avoid those things. So when you take those core principles and it's backstopped by the fact that you've got four Republicans and four Democrats working together to get to yes, that really does protect the process. There are other states where there are independent commissions, and you'd think that that independence would create a lack of you know, political maneuvering. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it really hasn't. California is a great example of a state where things ran totally amok. And in making the process independent in California, they actually created a situation where, you know, in this particular case, Democrats, you know, really took advantage of the process and swung a lot of districts just by redrawing the lines. That could happen in any other state, and the Republicans could do it. But here in Connecticut, we've managed to avoid that with the bipartisan process that we do have.
And I would imagine, Jason, you're saying, and listen, Senate districts, obviously, over 100,000. So you're going to get a lot of diverse towns, even though they may be next to each other, towns with different local tax rates who may have people that feel differently about statewide issues. But I would imagine for the House districts, which are much smaller, as you say, 25,000 on average or so, it may be just the case of what? Moving a boundary over by one or two blocks or extending it up by a half mile, I would think, or so, to get the equal number or the as equal as you can of a number that you're looking for.
Right. The city of Bridgeport has, you know, five, maybe six districts within it. And because they are so geographically small, there's not a whole lot of wiggle room. And quite frankly, in a lot of cases, the folks who live in those districts share a lot of the same experiences, mm-hmm. a lot of the same cultural history, and have a lot of the same priorities. Look at the Senate districts, to your point. In the 21st Senate district, State Senator Kevin Kelly, who's my senator, he represents Shelton, Stratford, Monroe, and a piece of Seymour, four different towns. Four different sets of priorities. So in that particular situation, it is much more diverse. But when you get to the House districts, which are smaller, you know, mine being in Shelton, a lot of my constituents have a lot in common. And that's not unusual, and we see that across the spectrum throughout all 169 cities and towns in Connecticut.
And, you know, speaking to that, Jason, finally here, I saw, and you've probably seen these, I saw an editorial or two, knowing this process was coming up and saying, listen, we can't do it now. You'd have to change the state constitution. But, you know, I did see somebody in one of the micro news sites a couple of weeks ago saying, well, okay, 36 state senate districts is great, but, man, there's 151 people. Well, actually, Jason, honestly, I've seen both. People saying there are too many state house districts and people saying there aren't enough state house districts. And you probably get that stuck in your ear all the time, too.
Oh, yeah. And it has changed over time. Our Constitution allows for between 125 and 225 House districts. I can't even imagine. But
can you imagine how long the roll call votes would take?
it takes forever as it is, Paul.
Yeah.
But the thing, too, is the smaller the districts, the easier it is for a legislator to sort of go off the rails a little bit and be a little bit more extreme because, you know, the districts are smaller. The constituencies are much more aligned in their thinking. So you run the risk of having legislators who are very, very far to the right and very, very far to the left. And it really removes the ability to compromise in many ways. So when you grow those districts and make them really, really small, that is a risk that you take.
Jason, great. Thank you. And I told people leading into this why this was important about an hour ago. Now, obviously, there's going to be plenty of time to publicize this because the elections aren't until a year from November. But I said, you know, Jason, once this is done, folks had better just double check to make sure that they're in the district they were in and the representative with the D or the R, the guy or the gal that was representing them is the same one in November of 2022, because you never know.
You never know. You never know. My father's in my district today. He might not be next year.
Oh, that'd be great for like the Thanksgiving table. There you go. Huh? Jason Perillo, Republican state representative from Shelton. Shelton described recently in the New York Times as gritty. Jason, thanks. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Jason Perillo there. Okay, well, there you go. So he is not anticipating wholesale crazy changes, but keep an eye on it.